Welcome to Near Death Experience Podcast. I'm Chaz Hathaway. Today's account is from ions.org and is called Love Was What Everything Was Made Of, Came From, and Returned To. And again, this is on ions.org, the International Association for Near Death Studies website. I had two NDEs, one at age 7 and the other at age 14. I remember more from the other one, as I was able to write down details and had more of an ability to analyze my experiences. My first occurred in 1978. At the time, an unknown virus had struck a bunch of young children in my community, Pittsfield, Massachusetts. The symptoms included severe dehydration, nausea and vomiting, lethargy, inability to eat or drink, and others. My brother had a milder case of it, but I got one of the worst ones. There were dozens of children who had to be hospitalized for varying lengths of time, from 2 or 3 days to weeks. My brother had been able to go home after 4 days. The ones who were the worst off ended up in isolation tents, unable to be touched by or directly contact anyone from outside. Of those, 7 were so severely dehydrated that they went into comas. I was one of the 7. During my coma, my breathing and heart stopped for close to 5 minutes. CPR was performed on me by the hospital personnel, and they were able to bring me back. All of this I later found out from my parents and grandparents, who had been there while all of this was going on. My second near-death experience was at age 14, while away at camp in a small town in northeast Massachusetts. My church had arranged this trip and had the bunch of us staying in a giant old cabin, which had a walk-in attic with plenty of sleeping space. For the 7 years prior to this, I had been bullied every day of school. I would continue to be bullied for an additional nearly 3 years until my family moved to Massachusetts, to North Carolina, in 1987. I sustained 15 head injuries, among many other injuries during that span, all due to the bullying, 12 concussions and 3 skull fractures. At the camp one afternoon, a fellow camper started bullying me in this attic space, which had a slanted roof on both sides with horizontal 12x12 beams for support. He shoved me backwards very hard into one of the slanted areas in such a way that the back of my head, which had already sustained several injuries before this, struck one of the beams directly. From the hospital description, which I found out later, the blow had directly impacted my brainstem, which controls most basic functions, including breathing and heart rate. In a daze, I stumbled downstairs. Another kid tried to pick me up, but stopped when I collapsed on the floor. Camp counselors were immediately called, and one of them, thankfully, knew CPR. My breathing and heartbeat had stopped again. He performed CPR for nearly 4 minutes until the ambulance arrived, at which point the paramedics took over. They managed to revive me in the ambulance, but I was still unconscious. I arrived at the hospital that way, with my heart beating, but irregularly, and my breathing shallow. The ER doctor worked on me for nearly 20 minutes before he was able to get a response out of me. From my first near-death experience, I only remember vague images and concepts and some vivid images. However, my second one, I remember entirely, and once I was in it, I remembered that what I was experiencing was something I had experienced before, and that my second near-death experience had a lot of the same features as the first. First of all, I definitely was aware that I had left my body, but when I glimpsed my ethereal body, I noticed the same physical features I was used to. I later learned that it was akin to a term used in the first Matrix movie, residual self-image. I expected to see the body I was used to, and so I did, to make me more comfortable. Second, I felt like I was lifted away, though I never experienced a bright light or tunnel, or saw any dead relatives. To that point, I had not lost any relatives in my lifetime. The first familial death I experienced was my paternal grandfather in 1989. The first death I experienced of any kind was my best friend, who was killed by a drunk driver when I was 15 and she was 14. Third, I experienced being in a place of some sort. Not a room, because it didn't feel closed in or limited, but definitely a sensation of physical space. I felt, rather than saw, beings around me, which comforted me and projected peaceful thoughts into my mind. In this realm, talking without speaking seemed perfectly natural to me, as if I'd always done it, but was just now remembering how. I experienced what some have termed a life review. It wasn't like a movie or something where I was outside of it. It was completely interactive and immersive. I got to see good and bad things I had done. I say good and bad, despite the fact that there was absolutely no judgment there. It was more like these beings wanted to show me the path in life that I had chosen, and based on what I wanted to be, how my actions or words had either helped me along that path or hindered me. This review was not from my perspective, but rather from the perspective of those my words or actions had affected. I experienced how I made others feel or think about me as if I were them. Let me stress here that there was none of the heaven or hell experience for me. No Jesus, no angels, no choirs in the clouds. No judgment, no punishment, no fear. Also no religious overtones at all. This I will explain later. I felt the presence of other souls nearby, those who, like me, had recently died and found themselves in this new reality. I know we conversed, but I couldn't tell you the substance of those conversations. In this place, conversation happened spontaneously and without verbalization. And since everything happened within the speed of thought, and everything seemed to work faster, it's difficult to put every concept into words, because it's like trying to capture a cloud with your hands. Several of us went together on a tour of sorts. We flew at speeds beyond imagining through space and the universe. We were unbound by the laws of physics or any limitation. If we thought about something, we were there, instantly. There was no passage of time that I could sense. This journey through space was, in a word, freeing. I felt exhilaration, excitement, wonder, awe, like a kid who had just got to go to his favorite places in all the world all at once. I never wanted it to end. Colors were so much more vivid, blending together like Van Gogh's Starry Night painting, and mixed with the colors were sounds and music. Every star we passed had a specific frequency or vibration. The brighter the star, the higher the tone, and conversely, the darker the star, the lower the tone. Globular clusters and grouping of young stars were like a stellar chorus. It was the most incredible thing I have ever experienced, bar none. I felt connection to everything, all at once. There was no sense of separation, no division between here and there, between me and other beings. My awe was their awe, and their awe was mine. Unfortunately, the journey came to an end. I was by myself again, but felt the comfort and overwhelming love of others around me. Love was what everything was made of, came from, and returned to. All-encompassing, unconditional love. It enveloped me like a warm blanket on a chilly day, and I just wanted to stay inside that love for the rest of eternity. While there were many voices speaking to me through this experience, there was one that seemed to stand out from the rest. I want to say it was a male voice, although there wasn't sex here, any more than race or religion or any other distinguishing characteristics. But it felt male to me, if that makes any sense. This voice told me that I had to go back. Upon hearing that, I felt cold and alone. The other voices tried to comfort me more, but still backing up this central voice. They told me that I would remember this experience, and that just recalling it would bring it all back to me. They also stressed to me that one day, my day would come, and that it would be no more than a blink of an eye there. I didn't want to leave, but the more I tried to stay, the heavier I felt, like I was underwater and being dragged down by an anchor. I could sense my body somewhere else, but it felt alien to me. I couldn't imagine ever going back to being so limited again. The next thing I knew, I was waking up in the emergency room. I felt pain from my head injury and from falling when I went unconscious. But it was weird to me. I felt the pain, but in a disconnected sort of way, like it was happening to someone else, but I was feeling it with them. I was disoriented and confused, and nothing felt real to me. I didn't respond to the doctor at first because I felt torn between what I had just experienced and this physical realm. I don't recall anything from after my first near-death experience as far as what I did afterwards. All the details I have are from others who were there. My memory for events below the age of 12 is spotty at best, due to the multiple head injuries and dying twice. I feel more connected to the other realm than this one. The things I heard from my family about the differences between me before my first near-death experience and after were that my IQ dropped slightly, seemingly overnight. I had been in a gifted class beforehand and had a zest for life and exploration and a curiosity about everything around me. However, afterwards, I was lethargic, had almost no interest in school, and slept a lot more. Between the constant bullying, my grades in school that were dropping off, and knowing that I was not where I wanted to be, I fell into a deep depression that lasted for years. I thought daily about taking my own life, because my life here seemed to be all about pain and suffering. And I knew there was a better place than that, a better place that I was now separated from. When I was 16, not long after my family moved to North Carolina from Massachusetts, my depression came to a head. I had spent months fantasizing about ending my life. I had considered and discarded dozens of scenarios because they were outside of my ability to make happen, or they would put others' lives in danger, or they would hurt. After years of pain, the last thing I wanted was more of it at the end. I settled on pills. Take enough of anything, and there's a good chance you might not survive, and it would be painless. But one night, in a heated argument with my mother, I let my frustration and anger spill out of me in a flood, and I told her everything. Spat it at her was more accurate. She had the good sense to know that I was in a very bad place and that I needed help. After being checked into an inpatient ward at a local hospital, I would spend the next 4 months getting that help, followed by 2.5 more months of outpatient therapy in a controlled setting. My parents always believed that the doctor saved me or that the therapy helped, but it didn't. But something did. Time. Out in the world, I felt constant pressure to be something to everyone, to do well in school, to do my chores, to fit in, to participate in activities, and so on. But all of this pressure never allowed me a moment's peace to deal with the depression that was eating me from the inside out. And so, in the hospital, I hardly ever saw the doctor. Honestly, he was the worst at his job I had ever seen, before or since. But I had time to myself, to face my demons, and decide whether I wanted to leave this world or fight for myself. I found a strength I never knew that I had in there, and found that my demons could only beat me if I let them. I came out with a much more focused mind, a deeper connection to the world around me, and a deep sense of justice and morality that has only gotten stronger in the years since. I became an activist and an advocate, fight against drunk driving after my best friend was killed by a drunk driver, then later against bullying because of my experiences with it. During my life, I have championed so many social and political issues and causes, and continue to do so today. But I also came out with a heightened sense of curiosity, especially about the universe, our connections to each other, and about near-death experiences. I have read and watched dozens of accounts of those who have had near-death experiences, including Miracles from Heaven, Heaven is for Real, My Stroke of Insight, Map of Heaven, and others. And now to explain what I meant by the lack of religious overtones in my near-death experience. For the longest time, I doubted my own experiences because every near-death experience I had heard about was the same. Bright light, long tunnel, dead relatives, Jesus and angels, and all the religious things everyone ever talked about. I had none of these experiences. So what was wrong with me? Had I actually had an NDE? What had happened to me? That was when my research turned up something that changed me forever and gave me an insight into near-death experiences that made complete sense to me. Plus, it just felt right. Several accounts I read, like Map of Heaven and My Stroke of Insight, had a distinct absence of the religious overtones of those like Miracles from Heaven and Heaven is for Real. As I looked into the backgrounds of those who had these experiences, I saw a correlation. Those with a strong religious background and faith had more religious experiences. Those who had more scientific view, or from whom religion didn't play a large role in their lives, had a more metaphysical experience. While I had been raised going to church, my parents always made it clear that I was free to make up my own mind with regards to religion. I never felt at home in church, even while I was going every Sunday for years. Later, I would stop going altogether after an exhaustive but vain search for someone or some place that felt like the home I felt during my near-death experience. So my experience was definitely more metaphysical than religious, and I finally knew that I was not alone in this regard. The more research I did, the more I realized that near-death experiences are as varied as those who experience them. I believe that I know why. As I have already said, I felt an overwhelming sense of love and acceptance, and a complete lack of fear or judgment. I was made to feel completely at ease and comfortable, to make the transition between the physical world and this other realm easier for me to both handle and accept. Well, that's the same thing that happens with all of us. But what makes one person feel comforted and accepted might feel overbearing or stifling to another. So each of us is presented with a scenario that fits our mindset, and the scenario that makes sense to us, doesn't scare us, and puts our minds at ease. Some want or feel the need for judgment, so they experience that, but only in a way that guides them back to the right path. My life is far different now, so far removed from the one I lived before these two experiences. Yes, some of it was by my choices, but I know that these experiences have shaped the person that I have become more than any choices in my life. In fact, I believe wholeheartedly that many of my choices would never have been made without the influence of them. I'm passionate about a lot of things these days. Activism, photography, reading, writing, astronomy, and so on. But for a long time, one of my passions, really an obsession, remained mostly a secret. I felt like a freak because no one I knew had had a near-death experience. My experience didn't match those I had heard about for so long, and I felt isolated because I was afraid of sharing mine. But I'm not afraid anymore. I don't fear death, so why should I fear talking about this? So I've started sharing my experiences, first with close, like-minded friends, then with the wider audience on Facebook. I want others to know that they're not alone, and that there's no such thing as a wrong experience. Mostly, I want those like me to see that there's nothing to fear. I also want to let people who haven't had one of these experiences know that much of what drives them is based on a fear of the unknown. They don't know what comes after death, and so they fear it. But the only universal trait of those I have read about or spoken to with near-death experience stories is that none of them fear death any longer. That's not a coincidence. For why should we fear that which we come from and return to? Our time on this earth, no matter how long or short, is a blink of an eye compared to the rest of it. Whether you're devoutly religious, a once-in-a-blue-moon attendee, non-religious, or atheist, you won't live forever. Eventually, everyone has to face that moment at the end, whether you're ready or not. And as someone who has seen what comes after firsthand, I promise there is nothing about it to fear. That's the end of the experience. Wow, beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. First thing I want to comment on this, and this is the kind of situation where I have to remind myself to both not be judgmental and yet to voice the important point. Look at what this person went through. I'm not entirely sure, but I don't remember it saying clearly, but I think it's a boy, a man, that's giving this account. The only reason I think that is because the camp that he went to, there were other boys there, and the counselors were boys and so forth. There was no mention of girls at the camp, which makes me think it was probably a camp for boys, and so this is probably a boy. Anyway, these bullies, I mean, they nearly killed him. I mean, they could have killed him. It almost sounds like if he had chosen, he probably could have stayed. He didn't. Well, okay, so that's an unclear point in near-death experiences, whether it's always a choice. Because sometimes calling it a choice is not really fair, because it's like, well, pretty much you have to go back, but we'd like you to choose it. And then they say, no, I don't want to go back. And well, let me show you some things. And they see that, no, I don't want to go back. Well, let me show you some more things. No, I don't want to go back. Nothing you can do can convince me to go back. And they finally keep getting shown things or talked into it until they go. And others, they're just, you know, almost like tricked into it. as one I heard recently, that was just absolutely insistent on not returning. And there's being shown glimpses of what they would experience in the future. And the person had this tiny little passing thought upon seeing one of the events in her future that she thought, huh, that's kind of cool. And boom, she was back in her body. So if you can call that a choice, they seem to have a choice. You know. Anyway, the point is, these bullies, I mean, they essentially killed him. I mean, they did kill him. He was gone. He came back. But these days, I think there's a little bit better way of dealing with that, or I should, not better way of dealing with that. There are heavier consequences for those who do such things. I mean, they may go to juvenile detention until they're 18 and then go straight to jail from there with that severe of bullying. But man, it's surprising how many of these accounts people are bullied. And often I remember both being bullied and seeing kids bullied much worse than I was bullied. And I do know from seeing that and experiencing that those who had, you know, compassion or a sense of, you know, love for animals or, you know, anything that made them more spiritual-like, kids just make fun of them brutally for it. And it wasn't that they were necessarily pointing directly at that thing, but rather they would just get bullied. It was like being spiritual in some way made them a target for bullying. I never understood that, you know, which kind of fits along with those with either mental or severe physical disabilities. Often they're blessed with great spiritual gifts or insights and so forth, and whether because of their experience or as a result of their experience or whatever, but they're bullied terribly. I mean, and it sounds like this may have been one such experience, because they were, because this person had numerous near-death experiences, both from a young child into teenage years. Anyway, but that did lead to the near-death experience. And my first thought was, man, you know, these people are going to have to go and see the results of the bullying. I mean, they probably just saw the person get knocked out and thought that was funny, and they were rushed to the hospital or something. Maybe a little bit nervous that they'd be in big trouble for that or something, and may have never seen the result. But this person's life was severely, severely affected by the bullying. And yet, if they can see the full insight, look what this person did with it. He became an advocate for victims and got involved in teaching about bullying and teaching about drunk driving and other things that which they wouldn't have done if they hadn't been bullied. Which, you know, as you think about the Visions of Glory, I think it was the first episode, could have been the second, where this bully had made kind of a contract with the individual to be involved in that in order to change the course of that bully's family experience because someone stood up to him. I mean, this is the kind of thing that it's like maybe they needed to have this near-death experience, and so it was agreed upon previously that they would do this. I don't know. But one thing that becomes clear is that from these kind of near-death experiences is that everything seems to happen for a reason. It just seems to. It's some interesting insights that he has on the religious aspect. He didn't think that his was a near-death experience for a while because he didn't see Jesus or angels and didn't see a light or a tunnel. But what he did experience was every bit as real and as metaphysical, if you will, as any other near-death experience. And, you know, it sounds like the kind of experience that's akin to Eben Alexander's or some of those others like that, where they don't necessarily see a particular religious figure, but the experience is so all-encompassing and this oneness aspect is so powerful that it dominates the attention and the memory of the individuals who experience them. And what this person says about it is interesting, that they feel like those who are from a religious background or have religious feelings about things tend to have more experiences with religious figures or religious beings and so forth. And as I think about that and try to think, okay, between those who are metaphysical only versus metaphysical and religious, I would have to say that there does seem to be, just off the top of my head, picturing the ones that I can remember, there does seem to be a correlation there. There's not a perfect alignment, because you think of somebody like Howard Storm, who was just as atheist and non-religious as you can imagine, and he was very materialistic. He was just like, you know, when he had the impression to call out to God, he's like, what even does that mean? I have no idea how to do that. And so he's like, God bless America. And starts shouting out, you know, my country 'tis of thee. And like, the closest things that he could relate to religious experience, and they were pretty far off, and yet they were as much as he could relate to, and so he drew upon those until he finally recalled this Jesus figure and called out for Jesus, and then whoom, and then this incredible, beautiful experience with Jesus Christ. And so it's not a foregone conclusion, the religiosity versus religious near-death experience, but there does seem to be some correlation there. And even Howard Storm, perhaps, if he had been more religious, he would have called out to such a being sooner and had less experience in the darkness and more experience in the light. So, anyway, very interesting. If you have had an experience, if you have had a near-death experience or something very similar, I would like to hear from you. In fact, I would love to start doing some interviews. I don't want this to be an interview every day show. I just don't have the time or the mental, organization ability to organize all the phone calls and so forth that would be. But I would love to get some interviews in here as well. And so if you would like to be interviewed for your near-death experience, please contact me. Okay, you can do that through the same means as you can for if you would just like to share your experience without it being a full interview, which is to call our number, which is 970-NDE-CAST, and also you can call or you can email neardeathexperiencepodcast@gmail.com, or you can contact me on the podcast, which is neardeathexperiencepodcast.org, either by the contact links, which I'm not even sure if there are some, I think there are, or you can do it in a comment, whatever, any way that you can get a hold of me, and I will get a hold of you. And also there is a Facebook page, which if you'd like to join that, you can contact me through that as well, which is just called Near Death Experience Podcast. And so I would love to do some interviews. Now that the website is up and we've got the RSS feeds all up and going, and you know, while there's always more to develop on the website and so forth, I think we're ready to start trying some interviews occasionally. So if you would like to be interviewed, I would love, love, love to interview you. Okay, don't think that it's an inconvenience on me. I am eager to speak with you. So with that, thank you, all of you. I so much appreciate the opportunity to do these podcasts. If you get on iTunes and leave a review, that will help to get the word out on iTunes, which I think seems to be the primary way that people come across this website, because they search for something like near-death experiences and they find it that way. If there's a lot of reviews, iTunes says, oh, well, this is one that people are listening to. So that would be a good way to help get the word out. Also, you can share it with others. We just want to do some good in the world, right? Between us all, there's so much good that we can do. And I can't do this that I'm doing without you. I need you listening. I need you sharing. I need you to help me get the word out about it. Because if there's one thing I've found in my business endeavors, as well as my musical endeavors and so forth, I'm not that good at getting the word out about things that I'm doing. But with something like this, I don't think I need to, because you guys have done such an incredible job so far, helping to get this thing off the ground and get it going. And I so much appreciate that. So with that, thank you, all of you, once again, for listening.